Welcome to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast by RFI English. I'm Melissa Shemam. Twice a month, this podcast looks at one major issue on the continent, one country or one idea at a time. This week, we focus on the weight of stereotypes on Africa. An NGO named Africa No Filter, a donor collaborative that supports the development of nuanced and contemporary stories, has produced a report measuring the consequences of stereotypical and harmful narratives within and about Africa. Their recent report estimates that the annual loss for African economies is at $4.2 billion. These funds could otherwise be invested in essential sectors like education, healthcare, and infrastructure. Historically, Western media have often depicted Africa through the lens of poverty, conflict, and corruption, overlooking stories of success, innovation, and resilience. These stereotypes not only distort global perceptions of Africa, but also impact investment decisions and economic dynamics on the continent. So the report highlights that these negative portrayals have significant costs for African countries. To know more about how the report was produced and how the situation could be changed, I have with me today Abinbola Agundario. She's the campaign lead for Africa No Filter, and she's from Nigeria. I started by asking her how the report came about.
Africa No Filter is a narrative change organization that works to dispel harmful stereotypes about and within the African continent, mainly by working with storytellers. So the bulk of our work revolves around getting storytellers to tell stories better. And telling stories better means, you know, addressing the problematic, you know, hard to tell stories that revolve around issues, maybe violence, corruption, things like that. But employing ethical storytelling techniques and nuance and context and balance. And telling better stories is about pushing out stories that feed multiple narratives about the continent. We've noted through research that many stories about Africa still lazily revolve around stereotypes of conflict, of violence, of poor leadership, of disease and poverty. And so we've taken note of the harmful effects of such stereotypes in terms of how they affect how money flows into the continent, how investment and aid flows to the continent, how the world sees the continent and how Africans see themselves. Specifically, the latest report from our organization, The Cost of Media Stereotypes to Africa, was just a natural product, you know, of that. We've put out lots of research in different areas, like the Global Media Index and the Diaspora Report, but this is the first time that we sought to put a figure to really crystallize the effect of, you know, these said harmful narratives on the continent. And the figure that we have is $4.2 billion.
There's a lot of stereotyping that we could come about with, and I'm sure you've done lots of work on that. But where did the idea come from to put it into economic terms, financial terms? How did you even start thinking that it would be something that would be measurable?
It's not a linear, you know, line of thought, simply because the entirety of our work, advocacy and research work, has been trying to substantiate our claim that, you know, there is a cost to harmful narratives. And before now, it's been qualitative, right? And it's not just Africa No Filter, it's everyone. You see it in the mass migration happening away from the continent, where people are so convinced that the grass is greener on the other side.
Yeah.
So they're moving out. We hear it when you see some young, 26 young people were trying to leave Senegal recently and unfortunately met their death. You see it just in the closed-offness of investors to business on the continent and things like that, or even the shock on random people's faces outside the continent when you mention something like, oh yes, there are skyscrapers in Africa, and they're like, oh, you know, it's been everywhere. But the reason we put a cost to it is, just like you've said, it's compelling, it gets attention, and it forces people's minds to contemplate the impact we're talking about. If all I tell you is, oh, it's causing so many Nigerians to leave the country, you may not really appreciate it as much as me telling you that Nigeria is losing $10 billion as a result of the doctors that are choosing to not practice in the country and are choosing to go to, I don't know, the UK and Canada, for example. So the reason we put a figure to it, how can we get people to recognize that there is a real cost? So we did this in collaboration with Africa Practice, who are an investment and consulting firm. They are the experts in terms of economic analysis and things like that. And this was born out of a combination of research methods. So we had focus group discussions with experts. We had a desk review, and we had this quantitative aspect to it as well, where we tried to measure the relationship between media sentiment and interest rates. And that's how we got our figure.
How difficult was it? Did it take a long time, for instance? Did you have to get data that were actually nowhere, not even in government's desk, and to come up with new methods to try to measure the losses? Or actually, was there, was the element quite everywhere and it just needed to be put together?
I really like that question because it's a little bit of both, you know? Uh-huh. When we first started it, the first thing that came to mind was just, you know what, tourism. Tourism is going to be such a great way to check, you know, how perception affects the revenue from the continent. What we did was try to like identify strands and elements that could be measured with globally available data. And if you look in our report, the one that we settled on for many reasons, including elections are a global phenomenon. You know, everyone has elections, and elections generally get a lot of attention from media, whether Africa or not. And so we finally settled on that because the electoral index, the political stability index, all those indices that show the political climate, the risk climate of countries, they are globally available. To a large extent, they apply to, you know, all countries. We're convinced that this is just a tiny part. And this figure we have right now is not exact, but is an indicator of magnitude. I would be very happy to see other organizations or other stakeholders who are interested in the area, you know, just continue the line of research. If someone figures out a way to calculate, you know, the tourism, the FDI or the impact on migration and quantify it, that would just be cool. This is the one we started with. And I think the figure itself is compelling enough to pay attention to it.
Also, the report really focuses on big economies, South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Egypt. But can't we imagine that actually the impact is even stronger for countries in West Africa, smaller countries, or countries that have been at odds with the West? We can name Niger or recently. Even Sudan. So how do you project evaluation of some countries on the whole continent?
I am really glad you asked that. We found that African countries get more media attention during elections, but there is a disproportionate focus on negative issues like violence and election fraud. And then we also found that regardless of the comparability with non-African countries, in terms of like the political risks and things like that, African countries will still get more negative sentiment in the media. We found it in the headlines. Many election stories in Africa will most likely tell you about all the doom and gloom right from the headlines. I'll give you an example. The Mozambican elections were very stable. They were okay and fine. And I spoke to some correspondent, actually one correspondent who was like, oh yeah, I wasn't going to talk about it because, you know, there was just no news. It was just going okay. And then the shooting happened, right? And then there was some contention between the parties and it suddenly became newsworthy, you know, something that had to be talked about. And my question to them was, if everything had continued as is and there was a peaceful handover of power, would you have deemed it still newsworthy to tell your audience? And they said, no, that exactly is the problem. You understand? Because if we don't recognize good as something newsworthy when it comes to African countries, it just means that all that is getting attention are things that are negative and continue to push the negative stereotypes. And so that means that all that people really see is the negative aspects of the continent. So our research really focused on comparability because, you know, it had to pass the test of rigor and things like that. But I can just imagine from the key findings that we have, the unjustifiable interest rate they get just because of a perception. When there's a perceived risk, there is a real cost attached to it. So for those who have more perceived risk than others, it's definitely possible, you know, that the figure is more.
You're listening to Spotlight on Africa with Melissa Shimam on Radio France International.
Still many journalists covering Africa are not from Africa. Do you agree that, you know, it's a stereotyping that comes from even more negative times, colonial era, slavery, and are very hard to uproot? So is this something that you were able to observe, firstly, in your investigation and for the report? And are you pessimistic or optimistic about how we can address it?
Oh, very optimistic. And the reason is that even before African No Filter came to be, we've seen an awakening, right? A sort of growing consciousness in the minds of people who tell the stories and in the minds of people who read the stories. There's a reason news avoidance is on the rise, right? There's a reason solutions journalism has come to be. There's a reason people are turning to TikTok for news in a bid to preserve their mental health just because they're tired of bad news all the time. So to answer your question, yes, absolutely. One storyteller I really admire likes to start off his conversations with, did you know that the origin of photography on the continent wasn't harmless? You know, it literally was non-Africans coming to show the bad states, coming to show the poverty and coming to report on how bad they think the continent is. And another example is a photographer. He was taught absolutely everything to know about photographing in Africa before he ever got to Africa. And then he got to the continent with already preconceived notions of what exactly he's supposed to shoot and represent. And it took a lot of reflection and checking his own internal bias to say, oh, what I thought I was coming to see, but there's actually something different on ground. So yes, in terms of perpetuation of stereotypes, it does exist from colonial times, from that power dynamics of, oh, Africa has been below and this was above and all of that. And we see that distilling, not to say there's not been changes in the narrative over the years. What the issue is that there are still pervasive stereotypes that continue to harm how the continent is being seen. The stereotype that Africa is a country, for example, is one of the most diminishing, most reductionist stereotypes, because you're taking a continent that can fit in the US, China, a lot of Europe in terms of size, with 54 countries, over a billion people, and calling it one country. And even in terms of size, let's talk about the map. The most popular maps today, the Mercator projection, shows Greenland to be the same size as Africa, when Africa is 14 times larger in size. And so there are so many things, both visually and just in terms of reporting as well from the media. Now, you know, diamond rich, war-stricken, poverty-laden, those things, they are reductionist. And we call them stereotypes because they cause people to lose the opportunity to see that there are so many other aspects to the continent. Yes, sometimes coups happen, but did you also know that the citizens of a country take agency so seriously that they want to know what's happening in their governance? They are interested in democracy. They are interested in where the affairs of their state is being run. Yes, there's some issues with investment, but did you know, for example, in my country, the Igbo apprenticeship system is one of the leading business models in the world. It's been studied, and this is a homegrown solution. It's been existing from years beyond. But if we keep insisting on telling the bad, because we're so used to using those frameworks, those lenses, what we are losing out of, you know, is that opportunity to see and to reflect society as it is. I like to say that we are not a PR, you know, company for Africa. We're not telling you to never talk about the bad. What we are saying is it's not your job to talk about the bad only. It's your job to reflect both the good and the bad. What we are advocating for, right, is for the media to recognize that this figure is a small part of what we are losing out on as a continent, whether local correspondents or foreign correspondents, and it is worth paying attention to. And we hope it creates a level of awareness awareness in the media to recognize that there are implications to the kind of stories that they choose to cover about Africa. The media are powerful. They are so key and so central to shaping perceptions. And we hope that they recognize that power and choose to use it to reflect a full society, not one that is diminished to just one aspect, mostly negative.
On this issue of stereotyping, I also spoke to the Mauritanian filmmaker Abderrahmane Cissako. He was recently invited to London for a festival, Film Africa. He says that old stereotypes on Africa die hard, but the continent is changing so much that it's time for the media world to catch up with it.
This continent is often talked about, but it talks little about itself. That's it. And that's what gives so much room for stereotypes. Ultimately, I would say it's too bad for the others. That's what I think. Too bad for those who are stuck in their preconceptions and too bad for those who think that Africa is this or that. We who know better, those of us who live in Africa, or those who have experienced it, we see that the continent is in motion. This movement is very strong. It's a real movement. We are no longer existing in what some call Francophonie alone, or Lusophonie. Things like that are almost old-fashioned concepts, in fact. Their stereotypes and the dynamics of the world no longer work this way. This has to be understood. The dynamics of the world is about the others, whoever they may be and whatever language they are speaking. We often talked about French-speaking perspectives in cinema, but I think that's so stupid. There is no French-speaking or English-speaking perspective. The perspective of an artist is the perspective of an artist. That's what matters. Just like there are differences between Finn and Spaniard. Both belong to Europe.
Back to Abimbola now from Africa No Filter. She confirms this sentiment. She also gives examples of media coverage that harmed the view of foreigners about the continent.
One newsletter I received, I will try not to name, the headline was "A Nightmare in Nigeria." And I was so taken out. I'm like, oh my God, what's happening in my country? And I read it and it's just about a Binance executive, you know, that spent eight months in custody and some updates on that issue, right? He was being charged by the Nigerian government. And my opinion was, you are kidding me. Was this clickbait? Like, you literally took one person's experience and shaped a whole country of over 200 million people. By it, you know. So I'm really glad you gave that example, because it just goes to show that when we're not being careful about the implications of what we do, we don't even realize the messages that we are sending out, you know, constantly, that is just reinforcing people's mindsets about the continent. In terms of local reporting versus, you know, the big media, absolutely, we are an advocate for African storytellers telling their story. One very popular saying in my organization is that until a lion learns to tell its story, the hunter will tell it for it. So that just buttresses, you know, my advocacy to see more African storytellers. And that's the bulk of the work we do. And beyond our advocacy through research, we also strengthen a community of African storytellers, whether in the media, in the cultural space, in arts, in film, in music, in fashion, in food, because we believe that if they continually tell their stories, then they are at the forefront of defining the narratives for themselves. So what we advocate for is a combination of things. We advocate for a lot of collaboration between the local and foreign correspondents to say, yes, you got foreign correspondent, you have this wider reach and whatnot, but can you work with a local correspondent who is on the ground that can actually tell you how things are and not just, you know, leave you to write things how you assume that they are. It's now an identity issue. Again, we can't leave it to the hunter to tell the story of the lion. So the bulk of the work rests with us as Africans to take that responsibility and step up and say, enough, this is what we want. There is so much opportunity on the continent and we want our stories to reflect that. We want our stories to show how, you know, our food and fashion scene is thriving. It's one of our biggest exports. We wanted to show how the business scene is, you know, is doing really well. We wanted to show how there's so much tourism to be done on the continent because it's just a great place. I love the way you mentioned the happiness levels as well. I myself moved back from the UK and I can tell you I'm happier when I'm in Nigeria or in Kenya or in Cape Town, South Africa. I know that I'm happier. And it's not to say there is not advantages of being outside for those who are, but it's to say we cannot continue to, you know, miss out on that opportunity that is present on the continent. So there's work for both parties to do, the big globals, global media outlets, and the local journalists. But in as much as both sides, you know, continually reflect, that collaboration is key so that they can plug in that gap, forces assumptions and stereotypes to continue being used.
Definitely. And there are many other examples, I think, like climate and environment solutions. So inspiring. Yeah. Thank you so very much for taking the time to speak to RFI.
Thank you for having me. I think if I were to just, you know, wrap up, it's just to underscore that $4.2 billion is a lot of money. And this is just in terms of media sentiment and its impact on interest rates. $4.2 billion can get so much done on the continent, money that should be pushed to infrastructure and to things getting better, to education, to immunizations, to so much. And so we hope that this figure encourages the media to now decide to look for opportunity in stories. You can talk about the bad while providing balance, while providing nuance, while providing context. You can make use of less problematic headlines. A nightmare in Nigeria is not representative, you know? And so we need to be more hopeful about the continent because there is hope. We cannot afford to leave out the hope. And the hope is evident in the things that are working. There's good leadership. There's opportunity. There's business that are working. That's the final note that I would give.
Abimbola Ungudairo is the campaign's lead for the NGO Africa No Filter. This was the latest episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. It was mixed by our sound engineer, Vincent Poha. Thanks, Vincent. Thanks to our guest and thanks to you for listening. We'll be back soon to comment on African affairs. In the meantime, please go to our website, rfi.fr/en.